You're listening to a Get Abstract summary of Leadership is Language, a book by L. David Marquet. In his follow-up to Turn the Ship Around, L. David Marquet systemizes the lessons he learned as captain of the USS Santa Fe. Focusing on the language of leadership, he says leaders must discard the industrial age playbook that splits people between blue workers, who decide, and red workers, who obey. Today's fast, complex world demands a red-blue operating system in which intense periods of focused, goal-oriented red work alternate with periods of blue work for rest, reflection, celebration, and improvement. The first takeaway is the industrial age playbook that divides workforces is obsolete. In 2015, in one of the most preventable disasters in modern seafaring history, the El Faro commercial vessel sailed directly into Hurricane Joaquin. Salvaged voice recordings from its bridge reveal that the captain decided to make the Jacksonville to San Juan run along the most expedient route, not the safest. He made no allowances for the weather. The ship's rigid organizational structure meant no one challenged his authority, and everyone aboard perished. The captain and crew used an outdated playbook from the industrial age, when the workforce was divided into deciders and the doers, those in charge, over those who obey. The second takeaway is balance thinking and doing. Thinking increases variability, while taking action reduces it. Achieving variability and dealing with it is hard work. Staying focused on doing a job requires dealing with fewer variables, but at the risk of being short-sighted, which can bring disastrous consequences. Thinking and doing are two different, complementary mental processes. Finding the balance between them, an effort which must engage everyone involved, drives learning. Work that rests on thinking and embracing variability is blue work. Task-oriented work that reduces variability is red work. The old playbook emphasizes red work. It enforces using binary, yes or no language instead of discussing a spectrum of options. A playbook with both red work and blue work provides opportunities for back-and-forth conversations. To arrive at better decisions, include more people on an equal footing in your discussions. In the industrial age, blue workers did the thinking and red workers did the doing. Red workers earned their pay by carrying out repetitive tasks in a set amount of time. Their goal was efficiency, which meant fewer variables. This fragile, rigid structure is beset with problems. It offers no incentive for people to make more effort, because that means more work. The work is dull and not engaging. Lacking engagement, red workers make mistakes. They execute blue workers' decisions, although for too long, they had no say in those decisions, despite knowing that their work and input had value. Japan challenged the separation of red and blue workers with its Total Quality Leadership, TQL method, later known as the Toyota Production System. This strategy rejects the idea that efficiency requires compromising on quality. The Japanese fostered collaboration between red workers and blue workers, and the result was a significant innovation: smaller, more fuel-efficient cars that set a new industry standard by the 1980s. Sadly, the use of TQL remains the exception. Workforces still experience hierarchy-based divisions, even though everyone agrees on the need for change. Leaders must discard the red worker-blue worker binary construct. Today, everyone is both a red worker and a blue worker, cycling together through doing red work and thinking blue work. The third takeaway is don't obey the clock. Instead of yielding to time pressure, take pauses to reflect, ask if you're doing things correctly, and make adjustments. The captain of the El Faro felt time pressure to make a dangerous choice. He did not pause, reflect, solicit input, or change course. Red work is brittle. If something goes wrong, it can't adapt. If a team remains mired in unproductive red work with no options, stress levels rise and mistakes happen. To counteract this, plan operational pauses in red work. Give the pause a name, such as time out or hands off. At Toyota, workers on the floor can pull the andon cord when they experience a problem. the supervisor responds immediately. Together, the supervisor and the worker assess the problem and try to fix it or halt the line to investigate further. Changing a corporate culture and removing the stigma from requesting a pause takes time. People doing red work tend to have a prove or protect mindset that helps them maintain focus, but it may reduce their sense of perspective. The fourth takeaway is collaboration breaks down barriers and allows for dissent. When leaders fail to allow dissent, they take decision-making power away from their teams. Breaking down the barrier between red workers and blue workers requires collaboration. This involves four steps. First, have a vote, then discuss. Depending on your firm's level of trust, this can be a secret ballot or a show of hands. Instead of asking questions with yes or no answers, ask members to vote along a scale. The second step is don't compel, be curious. Invite outliers to speak and to speak last. Avoid leading, aggressive, or self-affirming questions. Ask how instead of why. The third step is don't push consensus, invite dissent. Dissent drives innovation. Outliers may remain quiet out of fear in the face of a consensus. Make it safe and easy for them to talk. Make dissent random by handing out cards. Whoever gets the black card must dissent. The fourth step is, instead of instructions, give information. People feel coerced when you tell them park there or be back by 10 a.m. Say instead, I see a parking spot there, or I will start at 10 a.m. Collaboration leads to fair assessments and to testing possible actions and solutions. The fifth takeaway is, instead of demanding compliance, ask for commitment. Collaboration opens the door to commitment. Compliance means your team members aren't thinking, only obeying, and worse, they aren't taking responsibility for their results. But when you make achieving a milestone the goal, as opposed to simply obeying instructions, people use their discretion. They think. Their motivation is intrinsic instead of extrinsic. To move from compliance to commitment, you must, first, commit to learn, not simply do. This makes it possible to accept unexpected information that might not support the group's hypothesis. Second, you must commit to actions, not just beliefs. You won't know if something works until you test it. This will help you get out of blue work deliberating and move into red work executing. Finally, you must chunk it small, but do it all. You don't have to solve all potential problems before testing your hypothesis, but you do need a coherent picture. When the El Faro sailed, the captain thought only of the destination, not the journey. He didn't break the voyage down into small increments. The blue work, red work, blue work cycle can move fast in rapidly changing conditions, but with less production in the red work periods, it halts the escalation of commitment, sticking to a course of action even when it's no longer viable. When the El Faro's captain made himself the sole decision maker, he left himself no choice, even given compelling new evidence to admit he was wrong. Having a more resilient structure with more input might have prevented a disaster. The sixth takeaway is never-ending processes make people complacent and disengaged. Instead, set goals within the process so you can identify and acknowledge achievement. Henry Ford's assembly line production innovation changed industry, but at a price. It focused on production instead of deliberation. Ford saw any halt in production as a waste of time and resources. For years, his company produced millions of identical cars with no pauses to evaluate or introduce change. Meanwhile, other manufacturers innovated, and GM eventually pulled ahead in the 1920s. When the norm calls for just continuing a process with no completion, the project can't handle any changes in its situation. If you fail to set periodic milestones, your workers will feel less committed because they can never achieve the rewarding feeling of accomplishment. They have no opportunity to evaluate why they've succeeded or where they need to improve. In the beginning of a project, the blue work, red work, blue work cycles are shorter because your team may try more than one option, and that requires agility. In blue work, you learn and grow. In red work, you perform and prove. Once you commit, The red work stage gets longer, but the blue work stages still pursue a bigger goal. As you cycle from blue to red to blue, celebrate achievements along the way so your workers see that you value them. Behavioral psychology teaches that immediate positive and guaranteed rewards motivate better performance. Have people tell the story of their achievement to gain insight into their behavior. Completion lets everyone move on feeling psychologically cleansed and ready to improve. The seventh takeaway is someone with an improved mindset needs self-determination to stay motivated. Having a mindset that seeks improvement invites curiosity and problem-solving. Stop the clock to relieve deadline pressure and permit people to pursue inclusive, divergent, and self-challenging thinking. In the industrial age, red workers could not evaluate themselves. They responded to blue workers' demands for improvement. If your organization discards the red worker-blue worker barrier, people can let go of the idea that they must prove themselves. People hold on to their be good self who wants to feel like a good worker. They are less comfortable with the get better self who risks error on the road to improving. If everyone embraces the get better point of view, people will be less likely to recriminate and blame others. In a trusting environment, people aren't afraid to be vulnerable, ask questions, and correct errors. Trust first and assume that other people's intentions are good. People need self-determination, which has three components: competence, relatedness, and autonomy. To reduce complacency and conflict, workers need mastery over their work, a connection to their colleagues, and control of their environment. To bring people together to improve, first, focus forward, not backward. Use past errors to build future resilience. Second, look outward, not inward. Look to the needs of other stakeholders, such as customers, to take the spotlight off yourself. Third, heed the process, not the person. It isn't one person's fault if things go wrong. It is usually a process problem. And finally, target achieving excellence, not avoiding errors. People will revert to passive behavior if they don't feel safe making mistakes on the way to finding solutions. The eighth takeaway is, when people feel connected, they will take more risks, knowing they are in an atmosphere of trust. When the Deepwater Horizon oil derrick was in trouble, subordinate crew members waited for orders to activate the blowout preventer. By the time the chief engineer gave the order, the rig was on fire. The operator was more afraid of disobeying orders than of dying in a fiery explosion. The lesson? Never underestimate the power of hierarchy. A power gradient is the separation and angle of social distance between two people. The steeper it is, the less likely you are to hear your team's complaints or concerns. A flatter power gradient eases communication, but a completely flat is confusing. You need decision makers. Connect with your teams by reducing separation and doing things with them. Reduce your authority. Observe and describe what you see. Those with the most authority have the power to flatten the power gradient. The ninth takeaway is combining strict goals with steep hierarchies shuts down dissent and opens the risk of unethical behavior. In the early 1970s, Ford released the Pinto, which the company designed to compete with smaller Japanese cars. Ford cut corners to reduce costs. It put the fuel tank behind the rear axle, where it risked rupture in a rear-end accident. Ford calculated that it would cost less to pay for litigation in the event of deaths, estimated at a likely $180 per year, than to improve the Pinto's safety. Such unethical behavior can thrive when the process does not include a mechanism for calling a pause, getting a sense of perspective, and correcting course. Organizations that adopt the red work, blue work cycle are more accountable. Workers don't hide mistakes out of fear or exploit systemic weaknesses. People needn't choose between risking customers' lives or their own and disobeying their superiors. Unfortunately, the industrial age playbook still dominates. Change must occur to bring business processes in line with the new reality of the workplace.